Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio this morning two people from a faraway place. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, where they are from, and why they have traveled all the way to Palmer, Alaska. Who wants to begin first? There we go.
Don Kostelek. I'm a transportation and active living planner based in Boise, Idaho. This is my sixth visit to the Matsu Valley, working on various things for the borough the last 3 years. So I've gotten to know the community real well. And for this particular project, we were asked to look at walkability as it relates to livability and community access.
And you have help.
He does. So I am Chris Danley, and I'm also a livability planner, also out of Boise, Idaho, and happy to have spent the last week here in Alaska bringing my knowledge and expertise on things like walkability and physical and social and mental health and all of the things that come along with being a great and vibrant place and how to help our communities become that.
So you've been here this trip, particularly in the borough, how many days?
I think it's been a total of about 5 days for this project.
5 days, mm-hmm. Okay. And since you're somewhat familiar with the area, Don, you in particular, been here before, done things, what was your intention? What did you think you were going to be able to take away from this visit? That's a good place to start, I think.
Well, our goal in doing the livability and walkability work is to not only come in and assess a community, but to build capacity within that community to assess itself. Because as consultants, we certainly like it when people hire us to come and do these things, but we're not here every day. How can we empower AARP, the senior center, and other groups in town to continue ringing that bell for walkability and livability? And that's why we started the week with a 2-day workshop that talked about the elements of walkability, not just technical things like sidewalks and crossings, but human psychology of that, and teaching people how to walk and assess their own community through the lens of what we see so they can continue to do that. And maybe in 3 months or so, when they want to take a city council member or a legislator out for a walk, they can translate that in the field and talk about those things and talk about those elements. So while we will do a walkability assessment and have a report for both for Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston, the bigger goal was to build capacity within this community for them to continue doing that as they need to.
So when we say this community, you're talking about Palmer specifically?
Or? We were focused, the project was funded via the Matsu Borough, so we were asked specifically to look at Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston. Those were the only three cities, but they also had an interest and very diverse needs, very different things for us to look at because their contexts are very different.
Right. And you've described three communities, which for many listeners, just saying the names will bring up different images. They're all different places. And we're, of course, a full disclosure here in beautiful downtown Palmer. And Palmer has in particular built itself as a walkable community. And full further disclosure, I live downtown. I walk every day. I walk well over 300 days a week in the morning and through the day in a variety of different circumstances. So I'm particularly interested in anything that deals with making my path easier, so to speak. But I have to ask the question, as you look at these communities and their differences, is walkability, and with your experience in other places, I mean, I've been in Washington, D.C. I know if you're attempting to cross one of those, not 4, but 8 or 12 lane highways, it's difficult. You can see the place you want to go, but you can't quite get there on foot in the time allotted, like a few hours even. So thinking about how we compare, and are there places that are more suitable, more easily becoming walkable communities in your experience?
Well, Palmer's just like D.C., right, in so many ways.
Well, the people that live here, we breathe air.
That's right. There's some commonality there. Don and I do work in a lot of communities across the country in communities similar, if size, to Wasilla, Palmer, and even Houston. And every community has, you know, sort of its own strengths, weaknesses, and barriers, and certainly certain individual and unique characteristics. But there's also a lot of overlap, as you'd imagine. A sidewalk is a sidewalk in most cases, right? But ultimately, with regard to Palmer specifically, there's a lot of great streets that are very walkable, very easy to get around. But there still are some challenges, some key intersections that, you know, you're out there and sort of exposed with some of the high moving traffic and so forth, and having just even just the wait time itself can be a bit of a barrier in terms of how likely you are to want to walk to a store or to work or wherever. You know, certainly the conditions in Houston are very different, much more of a rural setting.
Right.
But there's some strength there even in that community with regard to some of the pathways that have been built. Lots of good strength and a place to start as a foundation to take that concept and move forward. But certainly, yeah, there's in every community where you work in, there are opportunities and threats and other things that we put into the hopper in terms of what we see as walkable and how to address them.
And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
That in my previous visits here, and one of the things I've enjoyed about being in Palmer, staying in Palmer, is that I could park once, go to the meetings I was doing at the borough, walk to restaurants. If I had a couple of beers, easily walking back. And when the Fred Meyer was on the east side of the highway, me, that was another notable piece. One, a lot of our small towns don't have an easily accessible grocery store.
Right.
And when I heard that the Fred Meyer was moving across the highway, my immediate thought was like, from all the things we talk about and
sure.
small town economic development and all of that, I cringed.
Sure.
Because the thought of one having to make that journey and cross that highway is we can have all the great facilities. We have sidewalks. We have pedestrian countdown signals. We're building a new sidewalk out here to get to the front door of the Fred Meyer. But that experience isn't that great. It's loud. You're required to wait at that corner for 2 minutes to get the walk signal to cross. And on that leg where this Fred Meyer is, when I get the walk signal, vehicles coming eastbound on Palmer Wasilla Highway are still allowed to turn left.
That's right.
And that's a whole other set of dynamics that a land use decision precipitated. And it's a great Fred Meyer. It's the Taj Mahal Fred Meyer. I can understand why everybody's
sure.
excited and all of that. But that one piece and what it did for the dynamic, I think, will be interesting to see. And that's what we look at. Our goal is can you go back to somebody like Alaska DOT and ask for some changes in the operations of that signal? And that's a difficult ask for an agency like that when dealing with the accessibility. And what we heard from City of Palmer staff was, while yes, the downtown and that core area has a lot of good walkability elements, areas to the southwest and to the northwest on the opposite side of the highway don't have some of the basic access, and what can we do there? So our report that'll come out on Palmer will have some recommendations for obviously some nuanced changes in downtown Palmer that can improve conditions. And we heard last night at the community forum, there's still, especially along Evergreen, some intersections of concern. But we'll also have some ideas for how to extend that accessibility to spots west of the highway and integrate those residents of the city more into the community fabric.
Well, and one of the things we saw in Wasilla was that certainly, again, there's some challenges in that community as well. But one of the positive things we heard and a lesson learned, I think, is the new library. And they have absolutely had more success than they ever would have imagined. And in part, it's due to where it's located and
yep.
the fact that it is walkable in a lot of cases. There's still, again, some improvements to be made, but a great facility for folks of all ages and ultimately a gem for Wasilla and even beyond. I mean, it attracts people from all over the place. And so, yeah, it's a great opportunity for them. And with some improvements can be even better, for at least for the lens of walkability.
I know yesterday at the Palmer Depot meeting, where you were gathering input from a variety of people in the community, we talked about, you described a number of different factors that would affect how things are. And this morning at 6:30 a.m., I said, okay, I know we're going to do this interview, so I'm going to pay attention. I'm not going to be meditating as I walk across from our home here to the center of Palmer. And I looked around. I realized that, number one, at 6:30 a.m., it's light. It's kind of a nice morning. I was the only person, only individual person that was walking anywhere. So I said, oh, this is cool. This makes it kind of easy to do. And I counted the number of vehicles that I saw. And I might add that for well over half of my walk, I saw no vehicles. And then as I got into downtown, I saw the heavy traffic build up. There were six vehicles that I counted, nicely scattered. So I continued walking. I did not pause as I crossed a street and crossed the busy street, South Alaska Street there. And I didn't have to pause or wait for anything and so on. So I was reminded of that because later today, in fact, it's already begun. During the afternoon, today is a special time of Let the Girls Out. And there'll be in there already generally more vehicles out and about than usual, and it will change the whole dynamic. And that just struck me. I said, okay, if we get people to walk early in the morning, they will enjoy quiet. But the rest of the time, if you like people, you're going to see a lot of people, and it'll change everything. I'm curious. You've had obviously both had experience, Don and Chris, and I'm wondering what. I'd like to think about somewhere out there is the best example of a walkable community existing. And I'm wondering if you have visited such a place where it's all because of natural factors of the environment and intentional actions by community groups and councils and so on. There is actually a community that is of reasonable size, say, at least 5,000, 5 to 30,000, that is very walkable, et cetera. Can you describe one like that? Chris, you seem to be thinking one.
Well, that's a great question, and you're right, especially with regard to the small town context. The one city that comes to my mind, and granted, I'm a bit biased being from Idaho, I guess, but up in the far panhandle of our state, only probably 50 to 100 miles from the Canadian border, is this town called Sandpoint. And Sandpoint, it's located on a state highway, so yes, you have, you know, some of the issues that may come along with that because there's freight movement, folks that are trying to get up and back from Canada, big trucks and stuff. But the rest of the city, however, is, in my opinion, very, very walkable. In fact, when you drive into town, there's a billboard on either side of the main entry that says, "We are a pedestrian-friendly town," and "Stop for pedestrians." So the first exposure you have to the city isn't the city itself. It's a message that's clearly states, and it's definitive. We are here and we're going to be walking. Expect it. So please respect our community. Slow down and be aware of it. But for the people who live there, the street system is on a nice connected grid in a lot of ways. The new development that's occurred has respected that and also added onto that grid. It's not fragmented. There's sidewalks everywhere. There's great crossings. They've just done a bang-up job on a number of fronts to try and continue to just build on that message that we are a walkable community. And again, and that's a population of about 6,000 folks. So sure, it's very doable no matter the scale of a community, you know, all the way down to 300, 400 even. It can be done. It's just context and will.
All right, done.
Other things that a community like Sandpoint has, and we work also a lot in Haley, Idaho, which is 10,000 people in the central region of the state, it's snow country. You know, so it's not that dissimilar from here, but they do have, we talked about in the workshop and with the groups of things, what are called curb extensions, that when you have on-street parking, you have an ability to bulb out the curbs at corners to reduce the crossing time and reduce the exposure. And I think of the intersection of Evergreen and Alaska Street in downtown Palmer that we hear from everybody is kind of an intimidating place, that with a curb extension, it would reduce that crossing distance. And we know from examples in Haley and Sandpoint and other places in Idaho that in Haley gets 140 inches of snow a year, so significantly more, that you can design them and work around things like the plow operators will have a concern that their plowing operations of snow may have to be impacted. And there's a lot of good treatments there that for something like the report we're going to generate for Palmer will maybe profile some of those features and things. Because while, yeah, a plow may need to operate at a higher speed on a higher volume highway, slowing down for three or four blocks, knowing that every other day of the year it's safer for pedestrians, is something a community ultimately has to decide upon. But there's good examples out there, and I would look to those two. Sandpoint, I think, is a little more advanced in that realm, and Haley is one that's coming along pretty quickly.
Well, one of the discussions that continues to happen here, particularly looking at the valley and looking at Anchorage and the way to get from place to place, which in some ways impacts the walkability, is mass transit. I think the metric that has traditionally been used, if you were to compare the United States to Europe, is in the United States, 65% of travel is done by POV, 35% by mass, and the reverse is true in Europe. And anyone who's been to Europe across many of those countries know that, wow, yeah, I can get around here without a car. I can decide to go and I take mass transit and I get from here to there and I can walk and et cetera, and I don't necessarily have to have a car. As you're looking at what's happening, do you see looking into the future, anything that suggests some changes as far as providing mass transit that would improve, for example, New York City, for example? Obviously, a lot of people don't have cars in the city, and mass transit, as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, walking happens a lot more in New York because you don't have the car to immediately jump into and travel in. Any comments about the future direction of mass transit as improving walkability, if you will?
That's a big question, and we could talk for hours on that subject alone. But my personal opinion is, I wish I could say yes, but honestly, I don't think that the answer is yes. I think it's no. And the reason I say that is because what we continue to hear now is that the market in regards to automobiles is going towards autonomous vehicles. Now, so is transit. There's some discussion on transit going autonomous, but it's really the land use pattern that plays a major factor on how a transit system can be successful. The only one of the saving graces, if we want to put it that way, of why transit might continue to be appealing in some regards, I think, is that the millennial generation and the subsequent generations, and you look at driver's license rates,
right.
They're plummeting.
Yep.
They're plummeting. In the early 90s, a percentage of 18-year-olds was something like 95% had driver's licenses by the time they were 18. Now that number is in the 70s. And you have even full-on communities and small ones at that who can't fill jobs, typically part-time labor like in summer, because they don't even have kids, don't even have a driver's license anymore. But my point going back to that is that there's less of an interest in that generation to drive. There's much more of an interest for them to either car ride share, things like Uber and Lyft, and even transit, because they want to be on a phone. They want to be on their iPad or whatever their device is, and they're much more interested in sort of being entertained as opposed to being behind a wheel. And some of the, you see all the reminded of all the advertisements back in the 60s of the appeal of being independent, be a vehicle. Now it's less appealing, especially because of the cost factor of owning a vehicle.
Bringing it a little more local, I had a small role some of the transit analysis for the consolidation of services and things here in the Valley. And again, you're not all that dissimilar from a lot of other rural areas in the country that are challenged with that and what you said. And one of the things we found was that while the land use pattern is so dispersed, that the thought of running buses in between Palmer and Wasilla ended up being something that in between the cities, there was not a lot to generate ridership either from people who, you know, if you're living in a $400,000 house, you're probably not dependent upon transit or would see it as a value for that. But within Palmer, within Wasilla, what would some of the cities I've seen of similar sizes, a 1-hour circulator mm-hmm. route that hits all the spots in town, and maybe every third one is shooting off, you know, to the other city, and realizing that for Palmer, because of the boroughs here and other community services, people that are dependent upon transit need to get here via that mode. But looking at things, even just from a land use perspective, when we put a major healthcare or medical services center out in a location that's not accessible, we've created a disconnect, you know, right. in our community. And it's a tough one. Where do we find large plots of land for that? There's probably not a large plot of land in Palmer specific to put a major, you know, not a hospital, but medical services that people are coming in and out of every day. So there's some challenges that are in that realm. I think the autonomous vehicle piece of it is going to change the dynamic, and we don't know what that is going to be yet. The other end of the age spectrum is more and more the baby boomers that are retiring, and even folks of our generation, Generation X, that are going to be the next wave of retirees that are looking for different places to live. And heard a developer in Pennsylvania talk about small towns. And he said, you know, gone are the days where so many people are looking for that retirement lot on the side of a mountain or on the golf course. They still want to retire to beautiful areas with a beautiful backdrop, but more and more they're looking to be in those small town cores. And I think of a place like Palmer as, wow, you look in three directions and you're seeing rocky, snow-capped peaks and just a beautiful setting. And he said the biggest challenges he had was, how could I build a two-story condominium complex in a town of 10,000? And usually the zoning and other land use regulations are not oriented toward allowing that, even though so many of our downtowns had that, a store on the bottom, apartments on top. Now we've regulated that out. And he said, where I've found communities willing to change, I sell those out so fast because they want to be in a place that they don't have to drive everywhere. They can socialize. They can get to a coffee shop. They can get to a post office. They can get to medical appointments. And I think for small town areas, that piece is a little bit more of the long-term answer to solving the disconnect in our transportation system, just because we know financially mass transit on a frequency to generate ridership is also a huge financial undertaking.
Mike Malevsky here, and I've been talking with Chris and Don about walkability in the borough. We've talked a little bit about mass transit and vehicles. I have to ask, of course, about bikeability, which is this kind of in-between business, which here I can test in the Valley has dramatically altered. It has increased year-round in the snow, et cetera. Any comments about that?
Bikeability continues to grow. The appeal across all age spectrums of getting on a bike, and now even bicycle design has changed so that it accommodates our needs and throughout the year. I mean, you see, you know, some people call them snow bikes or some people call them fat tire bikes, whatever the case may be. But you're seeing even within that industry a recognition that we can have all kinds of things, tricycles. You're seeing, you know, a lot of folks, especially seniors, are saying this is a comfortable way of getting around. And when you're within, you got to understand, most trips, at least half of your typical vehicle trips are within 2 miles of your house. And that data is pretty consistent. So in theory, at least half the time, you should be able to substitute, you know, a bicycle especially, but maybe even walking via the, you know, via a car instead. And to me, personally, I see, especially in Palmer, a tremendous opportunity for additional bicycle infrastructure. But we have to be willing to recognize that our street system needs to change. And I always liken it to our house when we have, you know, kids who move out.
Right.
All of a sudden, now I've got an extra room. Well, what do I do with it? Things change. They evolve. And in the city of Palmer and even Wasilla, we have adequate width for our travel lanes, maybe even more so, that you're paying to maintain every single year. So what maybe can we, what else can we do with that pavement that can accommodate something else? In this case, bicycling. On-street parking is another thing. If we look around and say, you know, this street here, maybe there's not a lot of demand on the parking, or we've got a tremendous amount of surface parking elsewhere, maybe we repurpose that space and we get more out of it. All of us taxpayers are paying for it. We might as well get something out of it. So I think that there is also a tremendous opportunity for the bikeability aspect throughout the borough and the three cities, and also with the trail system that are along the roads. That's phenomenal. That's what's out there. And, you know, it's a good thing that's been done.
Okay.
And the way we start to look at bicyclist, and in some ways it's doing a little bit of myth busting, because I think if you were to ask people to close their eyes and just say, what do you picture as a bicyclist? They probably picture that person on a sleek road bike and with spandex on, and maybe they've been frustrated by that rider, you know, blocking their way while they're driving. And the reality is, and the studies have shown, that the strong and fearless rider really constitutes anywhere from 1 to 5% of the population. And the next group is what's called enthused and confident. And those are ones that I want to go out and do this. I'm going to ride in most conditions, but I'm not going to ride along that busy highway. I want that pathway connection if I have to be out on a major road. The next one is called interested but concerned. And that's the largest group. And they want protected facilities. They want pathways. They're not going to let their children ride, or they're not going to be feel safe riding in a 4-foot bike lane next to 45-mile-an-hour traffic. That's the group we want to target. And I think the pathway network, especially outside the city limits for the most part, is commendable. A lot of places don't have that. And credit to the state and others for having that as a standard. How do we extend that pathway network into Palmer? And I think what Chris was getting at, there's a couple of east-west streets and even north-south streets where there's on-street parking on both sides, but it's not heavily utilized. And the concept of a two-way cycle track or a buffered bike lane that separates vehicles from traffic is still within the road and serves as an in-street connection of the pathway network. I think there are some opportunities here. That's going to take some decisions because people may fear the loss of some on-street parking is somehow catastrophic. But in most places, that is not fleshed out and been the case where they've put in these types of networks. And I think Palmer's a great place that would be ripe for that.
Okay. Well, Don and Chris, I've enjoyed listening to you describe from your experience opportunities for improving walkability, bikeability, and all the rest here in the Matsu Borough. Any last comments before we finish up? Got about a minute.
I just appreciate everybody who came out to our training and to the workshop that we had last night. And it's been a great week and gotten a really good opportunity to see all of the positive things that are happening and maybe even how to address some of those challenges. So it's been great, and we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Yes.
And we do national webinars and presentations, and we always go back from places like this learning something new and using images from here in those presentations. And so while everybody kind of has that fear locally of, oh, we're not the best, no, you have some good things here, and you'll see pictures of Palmer in national presentations that we do of best practices and other things. And that's a credit to the spirit of this community.
Okay. Well, Mike Malewski finishing up with an interview with two gentlemen, Chris and Don, who've come in and have assisted by observing and encouraging people to participate in planning our own community. Have a good day.